You're listening to Powder Radio, brought to you by Powder Magazine. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Storytellers here on Powder Radio. I'm your host, Sam Taggart, and I'm excited today because longtime Powder correspondent, award-winning New York Times journalist, they call him the Sage of the Sierras, and if they don't, they're going to start now. I'm excited to have David Page on the show today. In Powder's February issue, the last issue of the year, Dave tracked down a man named Dan Helmstetter in Bellingham, Washington, to hear his story. Now, Dan's a mountaineer, a skier, an explorer, known for making difficult trips into the backcountry all by himself. And seemingly, at the peak of his conquests, Dan went off the grid. The post he'd share online, explaining in detail his trips into the mountains, they stopped appearing. His trail went cold. With the help of local connections, Powder writer David Page found Dan Helmstetter. Now let's hear more about how this story came together in today's conversation on The Storytellers. Well, I'm excited, Dave, that you're on The Storytellers, and you're calling in from Mammoth, where it's been snowing. It's been Snowmageddon this winter. You guys have been getting feet upon feet. You're not measuring storms in inches this winter.
No, in fact, we're not really measuring storms anymore. It just keeps on coming.
You were saying your back door you can't get out of.
Yeah, so I have my little office down here in the basement. It's not really, it's at ground level, but we're on a hill, you know. So in order to get to it, I've had to dig about a 20-foot mine shaft into the snow to get to the door. And I've lost all my view. I have usually a nice view of the 14,000-foot peak White Mountain across the valley, but now I just have this dark snowpack view.
You're living like a hobbit, a snow hobbit.
Exactly. My little cave down here.
That's nice. But the skiing's been great. You've been hitting the backcountry, doing some human-powered adventures, I'm sure.
Yeah, the skiing's been tremendous. I got, you know, I have a pretty good system for getting first tracks on the mountain, but it gets blown out within the first hour or so. Although we had some great storm skiing on the mountain, which lasts a little bit longer. But yeah, then took to the backcountry and keeping it safe and fairly low angle and in the old growth trees. And it's been stunning. It's magical out there, and it'll keep going for weeks on end. And I'm anticipating skiing backcountry through July.
There's an emerging passion for people getting out there and exploring the natural terrain that we have in our national parks and right out our back doors a lot of the time.
Yep, can't beat it.
So in our February issue, the last issue of Volume 45, you had a piece called The Soloist, and you tracked down a guy named Dan Helmstetter. When did you first meet Dan, and you know, where did you find this guy? He was on the radar for a while, and then he dropped off just like that.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, he wasn't on my radar. It was definitely, it was Powder editors that came to me with the story. He'd been on a few people's radar for a while. He was on, you know, Earn Your Turns and a couple of those online forums. He created a bit of a following because he would just go and do these insane first ascents all by himself. And, he had a pretty soft-spoken online personality, and it was clear that it was bona fide what he was up to. And so people like Lowell Skoog, who's kind of the historian of backcountry skiing and alpine adventures in the Northwest, was starting to follow him. And a lot of people were kind of wondering who he was.
He was kind of making his name via on the internet, via these blog posts, these summit reports, these kind of things.
Exactly.
Is that how a reputation is earned these days in the mountain?
Well, it seems to be one of the ways. I mean, people, it's kind of a new phenomenon. People can, on Monday morning, read about all the crazy things that happened over the weekend. You know, it would take months before something would make the American Alpine Club Journal or Powder Magazine, and you know, you wouldn't see it till next year if it was in print. But now with this proliferation of online forums, it's pretty easy to track what people are doing, and you're seeing photos right away, and Yeah, and I mean, what was interesting about him was that, as I say, it was, he was pretty low key about it online, but you could tell from the photos that it was the real deal. But there were just very few people who actually knew him or knew where he was. I had one lead, which was Jason Hummel, who's a photographer up there and a longtime free heel crazy man, Pacific Northwest. He and his brothers, big mountain bikers and cross country or backcountry skiers, and tremendous photographer. And he said, "Yeah, I know Dan," and but he didn't know where he was. And it took us a couple months between us texting and emailing, and finally I got kind of a terse response from Dan saying, "I don't think I'm the guy that you want to profile." So it pretty quickly became clear that the only way I was actually going to meet him was to rent a car and drive up to Washington and kind of lay it out and say, "Look, dude, I'm here. Let me buy you a beer." So that's what I did.
They call that the foot in the door method.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a long drive from California, so it was a little bit tense. It could have all been for naught, driving up to interview somebody who didn't want to be interviewed.
But when you did finally get to meet him and have that beer, did he kind of open up a little bit or?
He did open up a little bit. It took, yeah, I mean, it was definitely, we spent about 10 minutes off the record just talking about stuff, and he'd been going through some tough times personally. He'd lost his dog, and it was sort of a mysterious, maybe nefarious story. It sounded like maybe the dog had been poisoned by his neighbor or something. But so he was in a pretty crappy place.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to happen too often.
Yeah. Although I have a neighbor who I think would like to poison my dog, but that's another story.
It's those West Coasters.
yeah. But so after about 10 minutes, we realized we were on the same page and from the same place, and so he opened up and said, "Yeah, let's go for it. Let's, I think he just didn't want to become, there's this fear that he was going to be held up as some example of something, or I don't know." But it was just, I was really trying to go for just an honest story about a real person who was out there doing it. And yeah, there was never any really, one of the major questions that everyone had is why did he quit? Because he was laying down all these amazing lines, and then one day it just stopped posting. And we kind of circled around that, and I'm not sure we ever came to a real definitive answer about it, but I think he felt like he had to step back because he was getting drawn in deeper and deeper and doing bigger and bigger things. And I don't think it was that he was scared. I think that it was more about how he was gonna live a life that involved other people. There's something about, I think he got so sucked into the mountains, and those mountains up there are so insane. I don't know if you've spent any time in the North Cascades, but it's just amazing up there and crazy access. And you really have to be focused on it and committed and have no other commitments in order to hit it when it's right, because the weather's so capricious. But I think that was one of his big fears, was that the deeper he got in, the more likely he was going to be a hermit for the rest of his life and not be able to relate to anyone else. And it seemed like he needed to take a break. And turned out he was in Bellingham, which is a cool little town. And he's an arborist, which is a trade he picked up, as I understood it, in Wyoming. He'd come out from Brookline, Massachusetts in 2002, and just sort of landed in Jackson and bought some used skis and taught himself the mountains.
He's a real grassroots skier then. And it seems like he, as with everyone who spends time in the mountains, you have to find that balance of being out in that untamed wilderness and that wide open space and bringing it all back to the family, the friends, and kind of society in general.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I mean, I think we've all probably felt it. You get out there and it's like, "My God, why do I ever leave this?"
Yeah.
But then, of course, you got to come back and make money, or you got responsibilities at home, or whatever it is. And then it flips the other way, where you think, oh, I'm just too busy to get out there, or whatever it is.
Exactly. There's always an excuse.
Yeah, you got to find that balance. Yeah, there's always an excuse.
So what was the lasting impression that Dan left on you? You know, after you know, when you were driving back down through California, you just had these interviews. You know, what kind of impression did he leave on you as a mountaineer, as an explorer, as someone that you spent time with in the mountains?
Yeah, and I never actually spent time. I never got to spend time with him in the mountains. I went out and had an amazing day with a couple of his good buddies, with Jason Hummel, who I was telling you about, this photographer, and also Eric Worley, who's a total badass and has a bunch of first descents to his name, and super smart guy. I mean, all these guys are like PhDs and economists, and you know, working in Seattle, and then they do these insane, epic missions that last 3 days, and then, you know, show up at work in the end in their ski boots. I feel like I got just a brief little glimpse into this small community of alpinists, winter alpine, you know, backcountry skier types, and it was pretty cool. It was very, very different scene than any I'd ever seen anywhere else. But my lasting impression of Dan was just, I mean, he's just, as I said, he's a really soft-spoken guy, really thoughtful, philosophical, quiet, genuine, authentic guy, kind of sad. He seemed kind of sad, but he also seemed to be climbing out of a period of sadness and seemed to be jonesing to get back up into the mountains, kind of working through his grief over his dog. And he just met a girl, and the girl was going to cook dinner for him that night. So everything seemed pretty rosy. But it's just, it's cool, you know, in this world where, you know, thinking about skiing the resorts when there's all this pow and all that aggression that comes out and everyone's fighting for the lines. And
that happens these days.
Oh, my God. It's crazy.
It's real.
I mean, it definitely drives me to the backcountry pretty quickly, because I can't handle it. You see that side, that greed and this crazy human competitiveness that comes out. And it's so refreshing, recognize that there are these whole huge empty mountain ranges where you can just go out and be by yourself and be with the mountains and ski powder and breathe the fresh air and not have to fight with other people. It's a good thing.
All the good things, breathe the fresh air and not fighting with people.
Exactly.
It seems like there's an impression of going into the backcountry is easy, but these guys, it seems meticulous. You know, they have a serious approach to it all, and I think that kind of adds to the mystique of, you know, how you conquer these lines.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, and I would say, on the one hand, it's serious because the mountains are just, it's insane. I mean, you start off at really low altitude in these jungles.
Yeah.
You know, hiking up in your shoes, climbing through vines and stuff and mud, and, you know, you just ditch your shoes somewhere and hope that nobody takes them, but there are barely any trails. I mean, you get to the trailhead and it's like, really, this is a trail? But then there's this other side of it that's, yeah. And the windows are really narrow too, right? Because the so often it's just storming and raining and the visibility is awful and you can't get up into those mountains. So to find those little windows of sun in order to get on something when it's right really takes, as I said before, some deep commitment and, or lack of commitment to anything else. And so, yeah, they're on the one hand really serious mountaineers, but on the other hand, there's this culture that's, it's really lighthearted, and they're funny and smart and witty, and they're having a good time at it. And there's definitely this attitude that, you know, they just want to be in the mountains, and the objectives are secondary. You know, if they can get it, great. If not, they leave it for another day.
Were there any details that didn't make it into the final print story that you wish you could have added?
Oh God. I mean, the day that I spent with Worley and Hummel, I feel like was worthy of a very long story in and of itself. Just I can't even share the details because they're so particular, but just the conversations and the perspective on things really cool, really funny. I haven't laughed that hard in a long time.
Sounds like a good thing going on up in Bellingham.
Yeah, the only other component, I don't know if you want to talk about it or bring it in, but I do think I realize now as I'm dipping back into this that's interesting and sort of an ongoing conversation about this idea that with avalanche and the objective hazards in the mountains, you know, is it cool to go by yourself? Is it safer to go by yourself? It's a kind of a driving question behind the whole thing.
Yeah, Dan was going out and doing these adventures oftentimes by himself, which is a contentious point because you may not set off an avalanche if there's just one person. You may get stuck in an avalanche if there's just one person. You know, there are all these factors that play into it, and making these trips by yourself is something that represents Dan in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I've been going out by myself a fair bit this winter. And there's always that sort of nagging question of, you know, should I really have a partner? You see people out there and they're like, are you out here by yourself? And the kind of stuff Dan was doing by himself is really out there. I mean, it's, you know, it's the variety of objective hazards that he's facing where there's absolutely no rescue possibility, you know, where he's not going to make it out if anything happens. Definitely puts it right on the edge. But at the same time, there's this aspect, and you know, we were kind of talking about it with the human nature thing. You know, the larger the group, as we all know, the crazier the group dynamics get and the harder the decision making is, and you know, you find yourself maybe fudging a little bit in your decisions because somebody else is passionate about going ahead and doing it or not doing it. And I think one of the things Dan was really articulate about was this idea that when you're by yourself, it's the decision-making is pretty tight and pretty strict. I mean, you have to confront it all by yourself. You don't get to say, well, I'm going to do it because I'm with somebody who's done it before, or who can get me out of this if we get in over our heads. It's all on you. And there's something pretty cool about that.
There's kind of a mysteriousness to exploring that backcountry by yourself. You know, there's an anxiety, there's an excitement, there's all these feelings running through you, and you have to decide in the moment, should I make that turn or not?
Well, I think there's this false sense of safety when you're with buddies out there. So you just, you know, you feel like, well, okay, I'm with other guys, you know, we can do this thing together. But it was interesting just being out there with Whirly and Hummel, and we got into something that was pretty exposed, and you realize when you're standing on the edge of, you know, a 1,000-foot drop on crampons that are borrowed and don't really fit, and trying to hang from a whippet, that it doesn't matter if you're with anybody because there was nothing they could do to help you other than, yeah, that psychological, like, hey, come on, you can do it. But yeah, it's a pretty interesting exercise to confront that kind of thing all by yourself.
Well, it's been great chatting with you, Dave, on The Storytellers.
Yeah.
I'm glad you could call in for Mammoth. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks a lot.
And that's the show. I'd like to give a big thanks to my guest, David Page, for joining me on The Storytellers. It's amazing to hear a story like Dan's, and you can find out more about his exploits into the backcountry in Powder's February issue, Volume 45, Issue 6. Tune in next time to hear from Editor-in-Chief John Clary Davies, where we'll be discussing his trip to Michigan with photo editor David Reddick. They went last winter to find out who actually owned Sugarloaf Ski Area, a popular destination in the 1970s that just hasn't found its mojo in this modern age. That's all for now. Thanks for tuning into the Storytellers Podcast on Powder Radio. I'm your host, Sam Taggart, and we'll catch you next time.